This show furnished by Coast Psychological Services.
How well do you understand your own psychology? Are you satisfied with your relationships? Curious about how you became who you are and why you react the way you do? Well, take a seat on the couch with Dr. Liana, a licensed clinical psychologist, and Margaret, a trained psychotherapist, is a show about the psychology and biology of our human existence. Combining psychological research, clinical expertise, and personal life experience, Dr. Liana and Margaret get you thinking about living consciously and making positive changes in your life. Now get ready for a dose of Dr. Radio. It's On the Couch with Dr. Liana and Margaret.
Happy Friday evening to you out there. You are on the couch with Dr. Liana and Margaret. This is a show about psychology, the psychology of human experience, the psychology of human existence, of our human nature. I am a clinical psychologist here with the co-host of our show, Margaret Imhoff, trained psychotherapist. Hi there, Margaret. How are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. I'm kind of enjoying this cooler weather and being cozy in a sweater with some coffee.
Yeah.
I think you're also enjoying the cozy sweater weather.
There's something really nice and comforting about it because up until this week, it's been feeling a bit like summer in the middle of, of fall.
Which can be disconcerting for many reasons.
Yes. No, nice and cozy and safe and secure, and that might help promote happiness.
It might.
And that's what we're going to be speaking about tonight. So have you wondered how your levels of happiness compare to other people's? How do you think you're faring? Are you feeling good most of the time? What makes you happy? What makes you unhappy? Can we expect to feel happy all of the time? Are those realistic expectations? And what do we know research-wise? What does the science show us about what makes humans most happy? Well, stay tuned this hour because on the couch, we're going to be talking to you about the topic of human happiness and what you can do in your own life to promote more happiness.
Yeah, I'm so happy we're talking about this. Just talking about it makes me happy because I think it's so important and there are so many misconceptions about what being happy means, how often we should feel happy, and people are confused. I've been confused about it many times in my own life, so I'm really happy that we're talking about this today and actually looking at the research behind it instead of what we maybe were brought up to believe. So people can really know.
Well, that's right. There's so many misconceptions about happiness. And tonight we're going to be debunking these misconceptions about what we're taught should be making us happy versus what the science shows really brings true, authentic, and lasting happiness. Mm-hmm. And some of you out there listening might be a little skeptical as you're hearing me talk about happiness, right? I'm like picturing people driving in their car who've had a bad week or just rolling their eyes. Like, and we actually have some interesting data and information that one thing that makes people unhappy is the perception that other people are more happy than they are.
Wow.
So social comparisons do make us unhappy. We've talked about Facebook here in the past.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And so it's this illusion that everyone else is happier and living these great lives. And look, they're going to this concert and they're earning this much money and they got a new car. And everyone else has more well-being than I do. That makes people unhappy.
Mm-hmm. Of course, right? Because it's like, oh, I'm not living up to that. What's wrong with me? It's not a, but that's not right. That's not correct, right?
Well, that's correct. That's like absolutely true.
Like when actually, you know, those aren't all things that make you happy.
That's right. We've actually done some studies where we've had a certain number of people disconnect from social media and Facebook in particular for 1 week. And we've recorded their moods and found statistically significant results that people who are not looking at social media for a week report feeling happier.
And why is that? Is it because they're more present and they're not doing this constant comparison? There's not this pressure to look a certain way, be a certain way all the time?
Yes, it's because precisely that. Social comparisons lead to greater unhappiness.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's like we're more concerned with appearing happy to other people than with actually being happy. And I wonder why. Is that because we think, oh, it's like that fake it till you make it type idea? Like, oh, if I appear happy, maybe it'll come true?
Well, I think it goes back again to our evolutionary biology, where in order to receive important information about our survival and our adaptability, we look toward other people to determine whether we're okay. And that was an important mechanism in our prehistoric ancestors who wanted to be part of a tribe and didn't want to get kicked out of the tribe. And we've been doing it ever since. But we see, actually, that it gets in the way of our happiness. And we know that, particularly because of studies we've done on happiness in Denmark. So before we start talking about some of this fascinating research and really taking a look at what science is telling us about this, it's important to know that for years and years and years, as mental health professionals, as social scientists, as researchers, we have not been that interested in the idea of happiness and what makes people happy. We've been much more concerned about pathology.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? We've been focused on the problems or the problematic emotions and feelings, not the positive ones that we can actually build on. So I think when we were looking at the research, we saw at one point the ratio of studies that had been done on negative emotions like anxiety, depression, fear, things like that, to studies that had been done on positive emotions like happiness, joy, was either 21 or 23 to 1.
Wow. Staggering difference, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's why it's so funny, because solution-focused therapy is a therapy modality. It's a form of therapy. And it really is focusing on the solution and building on things that work, versus kind of in the past we've been doing more research on things that don't work and thinking, if we can remove the depression, then I'll be happy, rather than if I build up the things that make me happy, maybe I'll be happy.
That's exactly right. And that whole movement, we also refer to the movement of positive psychology. And I think it goes back to our focus on what's wrong with us and fixing what's broken, or fixing our weaknesses, or finding out what makes us abnormal and trying to change that, as opposed to what you just said, focusing on our strengths and how to build and capitalize on the things that are already there. I think it goes back to man's tendency to want to find problems to solutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. And focus on the problem and then try to solve it, rather than focus on, hey, this is actually working.
Yes, this is moving us maybe in a better direction. So it's really been over the past few decades that we've started taking a look not at what makes people feel depressed, but what do we know about happiness and what makes us happy and what does that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So starting off with a definition, I think, is really important, because a lot of people have misconceptions about happiness.
Yeah.
So there are three main things that we use as social scientists to measure happiness. And some of the largest studies and research groups who measure happiness look at three different dimensions to really try to understand this. And the first thing that we do when we study people and happiness is, one, we look at life satisfaction. So overall, how satisfied are you with your life, just in general, with how your life looks and the aspects of your life that are important and meaningful? If you had to rate your overall life satisfaction on a scale of 0 to 100, where would you be on that scale?
Okay.
The second dimension we look at are basically, what emotions do you experience on a daily basis?
Mm-hmm.
We do know that we have multiple emotions on any given day. That's normal. That's natural. I want to be...
It's not going to be happiness 100% of the time.
No.
Every single day. In fact, that could be kind of a concerning thing.
That's a very concerning thing. Actually, we have additional data that shows the more people actually strive for happiness and really set that as a goal that they have to achieve, I must be happy, that actually interferes with people's happiness.
That makes sense.
Right. So that's a little tricky. Like, what does that mean? And what does that mean for the person listening?
Well, I think, I don't know what that means. I'm kind of thinking of it for myself now. It's like, I'd like to be happy, you know, all the time. But I know that that's not possible, to be happy every moment of every day. It's like being on a high forever. It's just not possible.
It's not possible. So it's really not the striving for happiness that matters. What matters is enabling oneself to have the experiences that we know make people happier.
So it's more opening up to happiness rather than reaching for it and stretching for it all the time.
And moving your life in a direction of doing things differently and having new experiences. So being more focused on the present and on the process rather than the outcome.
The result.
And that comes up a lot. And we'll be talking more because that's such an important part of what we're learning about happiness is being in the present moment and not focusing on the outcome.
And I could see how that would happen, too. The more you expect yourself to be super happy, the more you're going to feel like a failure when you don't achieve that. It could be a vicious cycle.
That's right. So when we measure happiness, we look at the emotions that people experience on a daily basis. And some people might experience a lot of love and humor and happiness. Other people might experience more anger or sadness. Usually it's a mixture of all of these different emotions. But somebody who reports being happier is likely to experience more positive emotions on a daily basis. And lastly, the third dimension that we use as social scientists to measure happiness is one's sense of purpose. So how much purpose, how much meaning does a person experience in their life each day as they go about living? And we take all of this data on these three dimensions and we use this to understand happiness in individuals and happiness as larger societies and countries. When we come back, we're going to be talking about our happiest countries in the world, what makes these countries happiest, and what we can learn from that in our country here. And then we'll be talking more about this on an intrapersonal level. All of that, stay tuned. Coming up next on The Couch with Dr. Leanna and Margaret, 790 KVC.
Is that a faucet running?
That's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
I didn't know the trees were so amazing.
Yep, and the forest gives us shade, trees to climb.
That's awesome. Let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is Meryl Schindler with the Daily Nosh, brought to you by Doolins. Doolins on Crenshaw. I'm honored to have Greg Doolin here. Greg, we are in an age of fried chicken. Everyone loves fried chicken. You do have the best in town. What makes the best fried chicken?
There are a lot of things. First of all, you have to start with a good quality chicken. And then it's all in the seasoning. We season our chicken very, very well. And we have a great breading or flour mixture. And we do that double dip sort of thing. We flour it, and then we dip it in buttermilk, and then we flour it again, and then we deep fry it, and it gives it that nice crust, flaky, crunchy fried chicken that everybody just loves.
Every single time. It's amazing. And it's got that crunchiness every time. And the crunchiness stays. You take it home. It's going to be crunchy when you get home.
That's right, Meryl.
It's what you'll find at Doolin's on Crenshaw. Doolin's on Crenshaw Soul Food, 4859 Crenshaw Boulevard in Los Angeles. Just off Stocker, simply the best. Doolin's on Crenshaw.
Hey, everybody. We are
Lady Antebellum.
When we started out in Nashville, we never imagined what we were going to be able to achieve. We got here because we worked together and had each other's backs.
In America, we have the privilege of being a diverse society made up of people from all kinds of backgrounds. And that's a big part of what makes this country such a great place to live.
When we put aside our differences and work together, there is no challenge too great to overcome. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Air Force.
Cars, trucks, motorcycles. If it's got a motor, we've got your man. If there was ever a time you needed an automotive expert like Leon Kaplan at your side, it's now. The Motor Man. Sunday mornings at 8 on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back. You are on the couch with Dr. Leanna and Margaret. I am a clinical psychologist. Margaret is a trained psychotherapist and communications expert. And we talk to you each week about the psychology of your human nature. And we're talking about fascinating topics. Tonight, in particular, we're talking about happiness. What does it mean to be happy? What should we expect regarding our happiness? The things that our society and our cultures tell us make us happy, do we really receive happiness from those things? Or are there a lot of misconceptions? Tonight, we are debunking myths about happiness, and we are using science and research and data on happiness research to help you understand what's most helpful in terms of living a more happy and meaningful life.
Mm-hmm. And the nice thing is most of the research says it's actually a lot simpler than you might think.
It's a lot more simple.
You probably don't have to do all the things you're doing.
Right. No, there is a lot of good news and good information in this, and we can be happier. And that's what's important. So I don't want to talk about happiness in an unrealistic sense of the word. We're not happy all of the time. That's impossible. We don't want to strive for that. Striving for happiness actually makes us less happy. Mm-hmm. It's about making changes in our life and having new experiences that are likely over time to help us find more meaning and happiness in our life.
Yeah, and it was really interesting that you ended on meaning and the feeling of purpose being one of the main components of happiness when researchers look at this, because I think that's so important. A lot of the times, you know, a lot of times people think, oh, well, I'm doing this, but is it meaningful to you? Because if it's not, it's probably not going to make you happy.
That's right. So again, we think about happiness as one's overall life satisfaction, the emotions that a person experiences on a regular basis, the frequency of those positive emotions, and then, as you just said, a sense of purpose. And so social scientists love to study groups of people over time to really think about what makes people happy versus unhappy, right? And I want to make an important distinction, Margaret, because there's a notable difference between sort of these immediate short-term moments of happiness based on some goal being met or some sense of achievement that we have, right? So for instance, if I get a promotion at work or I get a raise or I get engaged or buy my first home or hop on the scale.
It's your birthday.
Right. All of this stuff, we know that these short-term moments create a sense of happiness, but what we're understanding is that it's actually quite fleeting. It's actually quite fleeting. And this is what I think we're taught in our society a lot of times, or in our culture, that we're supposed to have these moments a lot and that this is what brings happiness, right?
Yeah, which kind of puts a lot of pressure on you to constantly be succeeding and doing these things where you're having these moments of happiness. I mean, that's kind of stressful. And stress does not contribute to happiness.
No, that's right. Right. So Tara Brach, the amazing psychologist and mindfulness expert, talks a lot about the concept of if-then happiness.
Yes.
If I get that new car, then I'll be happy.
Well, that's one of the saddest things, too. In the U.S., they did a big study. I know you have a list of the countries, and I'm kind of dying to hear about about them. But just about the U.S., they did a study on, and they asked people, if you made twice as much money, would you be happy? I think it was in the 90s or 80s percentage, people said, yes, if I had twice as much money as I have now, I would be happy. And it didn't matter if people were making $20,000 a year or $250,000 a year. People thought in the United States, if I just had twice as much money, I would be happy. But that's not true.
I think we have seen a lot of data that supports that the relationship between money and happiness is quite loose, actually.
Yeah, it's not what we're taught it is.
It's not, and we'll be talking more about that. So
Countries.
All right, so we know that some countries are happier than other countries. And as we've been studying happiness and understanding happiest people and groups of people, we've taken a look and we've done more measurements and polls and surveys in various countries around the world to see which countries are the happiest. And what we've found, that for a while now, the country that has had the highest ratings of happiness is, drumroll please.
I know, I was going to say drumroll.
Denmark.
Denmark.
The Danes. The Danes are happy.
They've held that position, at least being in the top tier of the happiest countries for quite some time. Like, I remember at least a decade ago they were up there.
Yes, that's right. They've been up there for a while. They usually rank at the very top of the list, and we have a list here. And so we learn a lot from trying to understand why the Danes are the happiest. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right. What is contributing to that? And so there's been more research now to try to understand that in a much more significant way so that we can replicate that in other places. And I'm not going to spend tons of time talking about this because we're going to be focusing more on happiness within, just in terms of individual happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But we do know that there's several different reasons the Danes are so happy. And a lot of it has to do with trust in their culture. Danes tend to trust each other. There's a lot of integrity and honesty, and people feel comfortable with each other, like the person around them or their neighbor isn't likely to do harm towards them.
So they
feel
safe. They feel goodwill.
Yes.
They feel they can be authentic. Authenticity is a huge piece of being happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense.
That makes sense. And then along the lines of safety is also security. A sense, Denmark is a welfare state. So a sense that if I hit some hard times or something happens to me economically, that things are going to be okay. There's a security within the government. There's a security.
I'm not going to end up on the street. I'm not going to die. It kind of prevents them then from going into fight or flight.
That's right. That's exactly right. There's a sense of things are going to be okay, even if misfortune hits.
Bad things can happen, but I'll be okay and I can work through it.
I'll be able to cope. Yes.
Not it's going to be the end of the world. Everyone's going to forget about me and, you know.
That's right.
The end.
That's exactly right. Wealth. That's interesting. And we're going to be talking more about money and happiness mm-hmm. and wealth and misconceptions about that. We see that wealth does correlate with happiness in Denmark, but it might not be exactly why you think it is. It's not just that there's prosperity in the country, but it's how they use this wealth.
Oh, how fascinating. Okay.
That actually becomes more important than just having money for excess material things.
Yeah, because we know you need, you know, food, water, shelter to even then approach happiness really on a consistent basis. I'm curious, how do they use their money then?
Well, that's probably goes beyond the scope of what I know, but it seems to me that money is spent towards things like more security and peacefulness and democracy
because
and balance.
And their country, their culture is not as materialistic as ours.
Well, that's right.
It's not so much spent on, you know, expensive handbags and, you know, exotic cars and things like that. And,
yeah. Well, yeah. That's right. And materialism is actually antithetical to happiness, as we see again and again and again. And generosity, and we'll be talking more about that as mm-hmm. well, that giving back to others and contributing something to others and to our things that matter to us also promote happiness.
Being part of a community that you feel you're contributing to is a huge indicator of happiness.
That's exactly right. So yeah. More community and collectivistic oriented societies probably are happier for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see things, again, like freedom and democracy and balance. And there's more. There's more to this. And so when we look at the countries that are happiest, we see that a lot of these Nordic countries are high on the list. Switzerland was up there. Iceland, Denmark, Norway. These are all the top ranking countries. But then we also see that Canada is high up there, higher than the U.S., Sweden, New Zealand, Australia, all of these made the top 10. The U.S., interestingly, was 15 on the list, which was higher on the list than I thought it would be.
I was going to say, is it bad that that's higher than I expected?
That seems a little bit surprising,
doesn't
it? Or
does that just make me more depressed about the state of the entire world?
Yeah. Well, there is something to be said for a democratic country, and we are mm-hmm. probably pretty prosperous. And
oh, yeah.
So there's some things that make sense on that,
yes.
But we have a ways to go, I think, still. When we come back, we're going to be talking to you about individual happiness and what we know contributes to the greatest sense of happiness in people and what you can do to live a life that feels more meaningful, more fulfilling, and more happy. There's not as much as you need to do as you might think. All of that and more. Stay tuned on The Couch with Dr. Leanna and Margaret.
The road to retirement can sometimes be a little longer than we expected, but Mark Goldfinger can help you shorten the drive. Listen to Retire Without Stress, Sunday afternoon at 4 here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And visit retirewithoutstress.com.
Don't miss radio legend and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame broadcaster Joey Reynolds, Sunday evening at 6 as he lights up the evening with special guests Frankie Valli, Cousin Bruce Morrow, and others. That's the Joey Reynolds Show every Sunday evening at 6, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Cars, trucks, motorcycles. If it's got a motor, we've got your man. If there was ever a time you needed an automotive expert like Leon Kaplan at your side, it's now. The Motor Man. Sunday mornings at 8 on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom. You see me around the neighborhood and you tell me that I'm a pretty good kid. Well, I'm one out of every five children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger.
Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help.
Every dollar you donate helps provide 8 meals for kids like me.
We are Feeding America, brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Infectious diseases spread by pests like malaria, Zika, and Chagas disease are causing a worldwide health crisis. Fortunately, here at home, we don't face the same level of threat, but we shouldn't let our guard down. Mosquito-borne diseases like West Nile virus and Zika are impacting communities across the U.S., and Lyme disease spread by ticks is on the rise. Whether around the world or just around the block, get the facts you need to protect your family at pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
790 KABC.
I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa, I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa, I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa.
Welcome back to On the Couch with Dr. Liana and Margaret. This is a show about the psychology of human nature and human existence. And we're talking all about happiness research tonight. What does it mean to be happy? How do we define that? How do we measure that and why? What have you been taught about happiness? What are the things that you think promote happiness? And what are your expectations? Is it realistic to think you're going to be happy all of the time? No, of course it's not.
No.
Yeah, right. So there's tons of interesting data out there, and we've been studying this in more significant ways over the last several decades, learning a lot more about what is likely to bring the greatest happiness to people. Mm-hmm. We've been talking a bit about what makes nations happier, and we talked about Denmark as being one of the top ranking nations in the world for happiness. Mm-hmm. And why is that? There's so much that we can learn, and we actually know that on a global level, more and more countries like Japan and China and Germany and France are all starting to use happiness surveys and really take a closer look at this and using happiness as a parameter for progress, for national progress.
How cool is that? Instead of just measuring, you know, what the country's output is or what looking at the budget, actually looking at the quality of life,
the quality
as the people
of life.
Experience it.
Yes, the well-being. Yeah. I love that. I hope the U.S. follows suit with that, because I think a lot of this starts at the socio-political level.
It
right?
does, and how you're feeling psychologically affects your physical health. I mean, it affects so much.
It's so important.
And it's so cool to be talking about these things or happiness on a global scale, because there are these things that are common, right, about happiness, but then how we apply them is so individual. Mm-hmm. Like, there are things we know, sharing makes people happy, having connections makes people happy, getting exercise makes people happy, but how we choose to do that is so individual, and it will be meaningful in different ways to different people.
That's right. But if we can take note of these sort of basic facts that we're learning, and mm-hmm. as you said, try and create experiences around that, we can be happy. So we know that 50% of our happiness is biologically determined. People tend to have a set point.
So it's like your baseline happiness level.
Baseline happiness level, but that's not all bad news, and that's not all good news, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So some of this is predetermined. We do have a little bit of a set point, but the good news in this is 50%, the other 50% is something that we have influence and control over.
And that's a lot.
That's a lot. So yeah. So half of how you feel, you do have influence and control over. And by making some changes, you can feel quite, you could be 50% happier, mm-hmm. right?
And in a real way, this isn't like a 50% of your life is now delusional. You could be 50% happier in a really real way that contributes to your values and your goals as a person on this planet. It's pretty cool.
That's great. And we're not talking about these sort of short-term, what we call peak experience happy moments where we might be getting engaged or getting married or mm-hmm. getting a raise.
You just find out great news.
Right. Yeah. We actually see that these life events, divorce, marriage, promotions, weight loss, getting a new car, getting a home, some of these things, weight loss maybe not so much because that's...
As a female in California, I think that, you know...
It depends on what your goals are. If it's about overall, you know, improvement in health, like, then that's a little bit
feeling
different.
Feeling attractive.
But yeah, feeling attractive is... That's right. So we know that those experiences actually, over the long run, don't have that great of an influence on our overall happiness. As mm-hmm. we talk about happiness and as we're going to look at another really interesting study... We are talking about long-term happiness, deeper satisfaction with life. Mm-hmm. And the great news is that these kind of external events and happenings really don't play nearly as large as a role in our happiness and well-being as we might think they do.
Yeah, which is good news for most of us. I guess it's not great news for people, you know, who have 20 car garages and but they still have 50% of control over how they feel. So that's not even bad news for anyone. It's good news for everyone.
That's right. And it's about how we feel over the long run. And it's not about what we have. And it's about a mindset and a way of being and mm-hmm. a way of living rather than achieving these external markers.
Yeah. And it's something that I think it's so good for people to know about. And I wish we all knew sooner, because I think so many of us spend time trying to accumulate this stuff only to find out once we get it that it doesn't make us happy. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I wish I would have known that before I spent my life toiling away to get all this crap.
Right. It's very short lasting. It's fleeting. And people wonder, why aren't I happier?
And then what's wrong with me? I got all this stuff. I did what they said I should do. I did it all correctly, quote unquote.
Yes.
Why am I not happy?
Yes.
Well, Dr. Leanna, why is that?
Right. Well, you know, I think a lot of it has to be involved with living in a consumeristic, mm-hmm. capitalistic society. And I'm not making any judgments about capitalism on this show, but I am saying that we promote the idea of consumerism. Buy this, buy that. If you do this, then you'll... And it probably has its origins in making money rather than really considering...
Yeah, and there's a veiled promise there, right? Like, consumerism as a value, as a cultural value, kind of comes with this veiled promise of, then you'll be happy.
Right.
You'll look at these people, then you'll look happy like them.
Yeah.
And talk about taking advantage of our mirror neurons. It's like, oh, they look happy. I want to feel happy like them. Oh, no, actually, they're just an advertisement. So, yes.
And then we compare ourselves, and then we engage in the social comparison, which is like,
thing.
They have more stuff than I do, so they must be better, and then that contributes to unhappiness.
Yeah.
So we want to debunk those myths. Materialism, possessions, and wealth do not predict happiness. And we'll be talking more about that in a moment. But first, I'd like to talk about this Harvard study.
I want to hear more about this study because I hadn't heard this study.
This study is really fascinating. And it's an important study and a special study because it's what we would call a longitudinal study, which took place over 75 years. So this study began mm-hmm. at Harvard with some Harvard researchers in the 1940s. And they wanted to take a look at a group of men, a large group, over 700 men, over the course of their entire lives and study happiness and really look at these different people's lives and really try to take a look at what is correlated with happiness. Mm-hmm. And so they took two groups of men. They took the first group were Harvard students, college students back in the 40s. And these are people of higher socioeconomic status,
for the most part, yeah.
More wealth, greater power, more affluence,
privilege,
greater privilege,
probably
influence.
White.
Yes, that's exactly right. And then the remaining participants were various working class young men from around Boston, men who didn't have a lot or may had trauma in their backgrounds or struggled with poverty,
mm-hmm. maybe different cultures.
Different cultures trying to find their way to make it in the world. And the researchers were curious about who would be happiest over the long run. Mm-hmm. Most of these studies don't go anywhere. It's very hard to study a group of people for 75 years.
Yeah.
People either drop out or they die or researchers die. There's been four different directors of this study over the past 75 years.
Because you have to keep passing that baton, right?
Yes.
Otherwise the study dies.
That's
which is
right.
What usually happens.
That's right.
This
and
is amazing.
It's amazing. And it's a gift because we learn so much in studies mm-hmm. like this. And what we found, Margaret, I don't think this is going to be a surprise to you. We had one equivocal finding, a very, very powerful and poignant fact, I think, that speaks so much to us being humans and coexisting in the world. And what we've found that brings the greatest happiness, it's not wealth, it's not fame, it's not achievement, it's not material success, it's good relationships. Good relationships bring us happiness, period.
Mm-hmm.
Period. So what we see is that people who are more socially connected, are happier, they live longer, and they're physically healthier.
That makes so much sense, right?
So much sense, and really important implications for people who don't feel a sense of belonging or believe that they're not good enough, or when they're in a place of emotional pain, disconnect or isolate, people who feel anxious in social situations. All of that leads people to isolate, to withdraw, to pull away. And we know that loneliness, unfortunately, is toxic.
Loneliness is really bad for you. I remember in undergrad, I was reading a study about, and it said that being really lonely was worse for you than smoking. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily true if you're lonely, you know, or don't start smoking. But I thought that was really interesting because it is physically so bad for you to be lonely. And then we think about how we are social creatures wired that way since we're babies, how babies die if they don't get touch.
Yes.
And how we need connection to live. It's like food or water. You know, we can't live in isolation. Even Tom Hanks had to make his volleyball into a person to talk to.
That's right. In that movie.
Castaway.
Wilson.
Yeah. I never even saw that movie, but I know who Wilson is.
What a tear-jerking moment. Yeah. That was such a sad moment when he lost Wilson. So sad. But no, you're absolutely right. Loneliness is so bad for our health and our well-being. Those who are isolated are not only less happy, but they die earlier mm-hmm. and at younger ages. The brain starts to atrophy earlier. Cognitive functioning goes down. So we know that we need connections. We know that marriages that are filled with conflict are bad for our health. Mm-hmm. We are better off on our own or mm-hmm. connecting with other friends or family members, co-workers in our lives than actually being in an unhappy marriage.
Yeah.
We know that warm, loving relationships are incredibly protective. So if you don't have a warm, loving relationship with a romantic partner, try and create that in other areas of your life.
Yeah.
And if you're afraid about being alone in the world because you're in an unhappy or an abusive or an unhealthy relationship, know that you are going to be happier. We have this data. We have these statistics. You are going to be happier on your own and building relationships elsewhere.
And there are so many other people out there feeling the same way. You're actually not alone.
That's right. We also know that men of retirement age who were trying to make a successful transition from working into retirement, the men who replace workmates with playmates were much happier in retirement.
That makes sense.
So much so much interesting stuff and findings. And when we come back in the next segment of On the Couch, we're going to be talking more about our research and findings on what brings the greatest happiness. Stay tuned. You're listening to 790 KABC.
CBC Staying healthy is difficult. You've got health questions, I've got health answers. I'm Dr. Bob Martz, and tune into my show Sunday morning at 10, right after The Motorman. Sponsored by Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics and Chia Omega at finer health food stores.
The road to retirement can sometimes be a little longer than we expected, but Mark Goldfinger can help you shorten the drive. Listen to Retire Without Stress, Sunday afternoon at 4, here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And visit retirewithoutstress.com.
Want to get real estate tips and secrets from the top pros in the business? Be sure to tune in to The Real Estate Zone with Danny Valsalken, Saturday morning from 7 to 8, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Cars, trucks, motorcycles. If it's got a motor, we've got your man. If there was ever a time you needed an automotive expert like Leon Kaplan at your side, it's now. The Motor Man. Sunday mornings at 8 on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
This is Merrill Schindler with the Daily Nosh, brought to you by Doolins. Doolins on Crenshaw. I'm honored to have Greg Doolin here. Greg, we are in an age of fried chicken. Everyone loves fried chicken. You do have the best in town. What makes the best fried chicken?
There are a lot of things. First of all, you have to start with a good quality chicken. And then it's all in the seasoning. We season our chicken very, very well. And we have a great breading or flour mixture. And we do that double dip sort of thing. We flour it, and then we dip it in buttermilk, and then we flour it again, and then we deep fry it, and it gives it that nice crust, flaky, crunchy fried chicken that everybody just loves.
Every single time. It's amazing. And it's got that crunchiness every time. And the crunchiness stays. You take it home, it's going to be crunchy when you get home.
That's right, Merrill.
It's what you'll find at Doolin's on Crenshaw. Doolin's on Crenshaw Soul Food, 4859 Crenshaw Boulevard in Los Angeles. Just off Stocker. Simply the best. Doolin's on Crenshaw.
Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth.
Because I hope that you are having a happy Friday evening. You've been listening to On the Couch. I am Dr. Liana, a clinical psychologist, here with Margaret Imhoff, the co-host of the show, trained psychotherapist and communications expert. And we talk to you each week about psychology, the psychology of human nature and human existence. And we're here talking about research and science and studies and data to give you helpful information so that you can live your best life. We have a lot of misconceptions about what it means to be a human being and what's actually consistent with human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been discussing the topic of happiness tonight, what that means, how we define that, and what our research on happiness has been showing us is necessary to live the most meaningful and happiest lives.
Versus what we're taught or what the common misconceptions are.
So in our last segment, we talked about the one most important and unequivocal finding, and that is that the number one thing that promotes happiness is strong connections with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And in a minute, we're going to be talking about some of the other findings with this happiness research. But first, what do you think, Margaret? I'm curious, are the greatest misconceptions of happiness and what brings happiness?
I think the biggest misconceptions are, and we've seen so many stories of how these don't go well, like getting massive wealth is going to make you happy, where we always see these people who win the lottery that end up having a really terrible time, but somehow we don't learn from this, or people who get a lot of money and become drug addicts and have a really hard time and get depressed. But for some reason, even though we see this happening over and over again, we think, if I just got a whole lot of money, I would be super happy.
Yeah.
And maybe some people can, that works for, I like to think it would work for me as well. So we, but there's that.
Well, and I think that's important because a lot of us are taught that. Achievement, success, wealth, power, fame. We've done studies. We've asked college students, how many of you, what's your biggest goal in life? What do you think is the thing that's going to make you the happiest? And we hear over and over again that it's money
mm-hmm.
and that it's fame.
All these external things, being a big deal in the world, basically what's going to make me happy is being perceived a certain way by other people, mm-hmm. which really doesn't actually make sense if you break that down into an equation. that's another person's perception. It can't make you happy. What will make you happy is your own perception of your own experience.
Yes, and we do want people to have connections with other people, but that is more than just this immediate, how do I fit in or do you approve of me?
Yeah, and we were talking about this on our communication episode last week, about how if you're so obsessed with how you're being perceived, you're not able to really presently connect with the person that you're talking to, and how important it is to be authentic with what we're feeling, you know, even just between me and me, me, myself, and I, so that you can communicate that to another person and have an authentic connection.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So connections are very important, but the way we're taught to go about them is probably not the most helpful thing. But back to the wealth, money, and power, I think what we've seen is that, yes, money and wealth up to a certain point is correlated with happiness. We know that we are happiest when we have enough money to meet our basic needs.
Yeah, because I mean, if you're so stressed out about what am I going to eat, or how am I going to feed my family, or where are we going to live next month, it's hard to be happy when you're stressed out about just surviving on the most basic level.
That's right. We need a sense of safety. We need a sense of security. We need a sense of some kind of freedom in our lives to be able to do things and have experiences. But we actually see that there's a really pretty significant cutoff mark that once our basic needs are met for safety and security and food and shelter and clothing and a little leftover to have some experiences, that anything else beyond that is not correlated with happiness.
Yeah, I think the most generous estimate that I saw was after your basic needs are met, money can only even affect your happiness level by up to 10%. And what are the other things then? So once we have our basic needs met, if money is not the answer, what have we been doing this whole time? No, yeah. So are the other things, right?
Well, so somebody... Relationships. Yes, relationships. So somebody who makes $2 million a year is no more happier than somebody making $75,000 a year.
Or maybe by 10% because they get to go on awesome vacations. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, even still. So it's about, you know, achievement's important and ambition's important if you love what you do and it gives a sense of accomplishment and mastery and a sense of fulfillment. Mm-hmm. That's something else than just, well, I make a lot of money doing this and this should make me happy, because it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. And there's also, it's important to have congruence with yourself and your values. If you're doing something that goes against who you are ethically, it's going to be hard to be happy because you're going to have to compartmentalize that. You know, I'm starting to get angry almost because it makes me mad to think about all the messages we get about you just be successful, do everything right, get a bunch of money, look great, and you'll be happy.
Right.
And so many people believe this.
So many people believe this.
And I really think of that as like us being victimized in a
yes.
way by media.
No, it's a problem. I see this in my practice all the time. People have these unrealistic false expectations about what it means to be a human being in the world. And when we're not able to meet those expectations because they're unrealistic and a lot of times have been propagated by various agencies and institutions that have their own agenda, which is usually power and wealth, that people then begin to question themselves in really fundamental ways.
Yes.
And what they're going through is what is part of a human experience.
Mm-hmm.
So another misconception that I want to debunk here for a moment is that we're supposed to be happy all the time.
Not possible.
It's not possible. And when we're talking about happiness, again, we're not talking about at any given moment, am I happy or am I sad? We're talking about over the course of your life and your experience, over the long run, are you happy? Not, of course, there's going to be tragic moments and losses and pain and uncomfortable emotions. And that's so normal.
But is there a common theme of feeling fulfilled or feeling like you have purpose and your life has meaning? That's really what we're looking at. And I know we're running out of time and I keep going on tangents. I apologize. But there are a lot of tools and things that people can actually do to kind of harness their own happiness and build on the things that make them happy, right?
Right. And we're going to talk about those things. So we said that the number one finding over a very, very pivotal study on happiness is that the most important thing are connections with other people and healthy, good, supportive connections with other people. But in addition to that, we also see that people are the happiest are able to be present in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are happiest are mindful, and they are directing their energy and attention and focus to right here, right now, not getting caught up in the future and not getting caught up in the past.
And it's really about, you know, collecting all of these little tiny details and moments, right? Like, oh, I'm enjoying this moment. I'm with my friend. It's a nice day. Those little things add up and really build happiness much more than a big promotion one time.
That's right. So experiences and being able to be present and try to connect with joy and gratitude over whatever experience you're having in the moment also seems to be correlated with increased levels of happiness.
Mm-hmm. And it's much easier to do that when you're able to simplify your life. We're running around, we're busy, we're stressed out, we're multitasking all the time. And if you can up the quality of your current experience rather than the quantity of things you're doing, that helps too. Any way that you're able to simplify your life so that you can enjoy the present moment and you're not feeling so harried is helpful.
And we can try to find gratitude and connect with joy and appreciation, whatever the present moment is. And I think the more we get caught up in this idea that things should be this way right now, rather than things are this way right now, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many millions of factors in our lives of how things turn out, right? Whether I get that promotion, whether this group of friends likes me, whether this person, we're in LA, so whether this person likes my screenplay, right?
Yeah.
There's so many different factors of how things turn out, and we have this idea that they're supposed to go a certain way, and if it's not, that it's not okay.
And that we can predict that way.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't really.
And that we can't be happy if it doesn't go that way.
Because it's not right.
Right. And there is no such thing as right or wrong. The moment as it's unfolding is okay.
Yeah.
And so as we're present in the moment, if we can also connect with what you've been saying a lot about, gratitude.
Gratitude. And it's kind of perfect. Next week is Thanksgiving. But gratitude, I mean, in this, when I first heard about gratitude exercises, I found it kind of annoying. I was like, I don't really want to do this. But if you kind of break through that, if you're someone like me, or if you're someone who is already able to practice that, they've done studies that show if you just take 5 minutes every day and write down things like, if like 10 things you're grateful for, even if it's just like my shoe, my other shoe, I don't know, anything, right? It really contributes to your happiness. And you can do them with your family. You can do them with your kids, your partner. And studies have also shown if you do it with your family in the evening, it brings the family happiness level up.
And it takes work, learning how to connect with gratitude. And it takes focus and effort. So it's not something that just comes. You have to set an intention toward that throughout the day of connecting with gratitude. So we know the most important things for your happiness over time, we're not talking about momentary happiness, we're talking about long-term fulfillment in life, are solid, healthy relationships with other people. We know that we can't be fully happy alone. Being present in the moment, connecting with gratitude, and being of service to others are unequivocally the most important things that promote happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And so creating experiences like connecting with gratitude, being present in the moment through a mindfulness or a meditation practice, by taking time to give back to your community or your friends, and by putting in the effort and the work and the time and attention to forming really good, solid relationships are really the keys to happiness. And there are things that we can do to help other people be happy as well.
Mm-hmm.
We can be honest. We can be real. We can be genuine about our experiences and not send the message to everyone else that we're perfect and we have this all figured out, right? Because we know that social comparisons interfere with happiness.
That's the secret. No one has it all figured out. So we should help each other instead of try to pretend like we're perfect.
Right. And by knowing ourselves and feeling comfortable in ourselves, we can connect in more profound ways with mm-hmm. other people. So know yourself well, be present, be mindful, build connections, and get out there and do good things for the people you love and for the world that you live in. And you're likely to be a lot happier. And if you're still struggling with happiness and something's interfering and you don't know what it is, then it might be time to do a little more intensive work and see someone like myself or Margaret for some psychotherapy. You've been listening to On the Couch with Dr. Leanne and Margaret. We're here with you every Friday night at midnight talking to you about psychology and how you can live happier and healthier lives. We really appreciate all your support and look forward to talking more about this next week. You've been listening to On the Couch. Please visit us at facebook.com/onthecouchnow. Or join us on our online community and tell us about what you want to hear about. If you have any questions, we're happy to talk about it on this show. Talk to you next time.
This show furnished by Coast Psychological Services.
I'm a T-Bone man with a T-Bone plan for a thick and juicy T-Bone steak from Norm's, cooked to perfection. Starting at $12.99 with a soup and salad for a limited time only. For flavor that's down to the bone delicious, it's the Norm. Normsrestaurants.com, open 24/7.
Cars, trucks, motorcycles. If it's got a motor, we've got your man. If there was ever a